everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown, covering episode 193 of Monday Night Raw from January 13th, 1997. I'm Kenny McIntosh, coming to you live from a B&B in Blackpool, England, home of the Empress Ballroom, home of the UK title tournament, home of William Regal's wrestling career, and I am joined by Sondra, who is in Grand Rapids, Michigan, home of the lead singer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Anthony Kiedis, and Taylor Lautner, the wolfy abs man from the Twilight films.
Yeah, it's interesting. Taylor Lautner actually grew up in Jamestown, which is even closer to Hudsonville, where I grew up. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting, right? Not really, but it's about as interesting as this Retro Raw.
So you could have almost been in Twilight, essentially.
Basically, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But, Jamestown's this little, farm town, basically. It's not even a city, it's a village, so.
So all there is to do is to get abs, basically.
Pretty much. And there's a lot of corn.
Great. love me some corn. I hate corn.
Do you?
Yeah. I hate the texture of the kind of, baked beans, sweet corn, and peas.
Oh, man, peas are my favorite.
Oh, if you gave them to me, I'd throw them back in your face. I just couldn't.
You could just hand them to me and then I would eat them. If you throw them in my face, they're going to go on the floor and then they'll be wasted.
But then I'm saving you from the farts that are going to come out of your body afterwards. Helping you, really. So we've avoided long enough talking about this episode. And it's not even that this episode was particularly bad.
It was just boring.
Just there. So it's the last Raw before the Royal Rumble. We're joined by Vince McMahon. No Jim Ross this week. And because Jerry Lawler is in the opening match, the other commentator is the Honky Tonk Man. So my first question, Sandra, talk us through the Honky Tonk Man's jacket.
What was the Honky Tonk Man even wearing? I'm trying to even remember his jacket because it's been days since I watched this show. Was it some sort of shiny thing? Was he wearing some sort of weird... What even was it?
It looked like he was wearing a diamonded USA jacket that you would find... This is a very localized reference.
Isn't it some weird sports jacket thing?
Yes. Now, nobody outside of, Glasgow is going to get this reference, but I hope for the people who do get it that you enjoy it. In Glasgow... Right outside the city centre, or sorry, for you Americans, downtown, there's this really stupid old club for people who like country and western music, and it's called the Grand Ole Opry, not the Grand Old Opry, the Grand Ole Opry, O-L-E. And I never knew what it was. I always just go past it on the bus, whatever.
Just a knockoff of the one in Tennessee.
Pretty much, yeah. So you go in, and, it's basically old Glaswegian men and women in Stetsons doing line dancing, and then they do this weird... So I had to go one night, because it was, my friend's mum's birthday, and she decided to have it in the Grand Ole Opry, which, by the way, kill me if I ever made that decision. And and there's these two elderly men who look like they could die at any minute possible. And they've both got this, panel of glass behind them, and they draw guns, and then they, shoot starter pistols. And
is this part of a show, or are these just men who are entertaining themselves with starter pistols?
I still don't know. But my point is, it feels like when they leave, they would put on the Honky Tonk Man's jacket.
I could definitely see that being the case.
So, the Honky Tonk Man was there, and, he's still looking, Sondra. For his new protege, he's still looking for the next greatest of all time. Apparently. Which, by the way, one of my favorite parts of this show is when Vince McMahon basically asks Bret Hart if he's interested, and you can just hear the audible from Bret Hart. Just can't be fucked even entertaining this idea.
No, nor should he entertain this idea. Frankly, I mean. This whole storyline already, if you can call it a storyline, it's just the Honky Tonk Man going out there and being like, so I'm looking for a protege and also ruining commentary. That's all he does, basically. And it's so useless. We did have an intro to the show before the Honky Tonk Man graced us with his presence, because I just love the fact that they say, they show Psycho Sid attacking Pete Lothario, right? And, you know, it was meant to tear the hearts out of the entire Lothario family.
I'm sure it was.
He threw Pete on the table. And then it said something about Shawn Michaels being alive and kicking, and immediately I was like, oh, that's unfortunate.
Well, the other thing is, so Shawn Michaels is... We see for most of tonight that Shawn Michaels is residing at Park Place in San Antonio, Texas. And it took me a good 45 minutes to understand why he was at Park Place. Because Vince McMahon kept saying, home of the Royal Rumble, and I'm like, it's taking place in a bar? It was the Alamo Dome.
But Shotgun Saturday Night, on the other hand.
Yeah, which is going to take place in Park Place. So
are they just camping out till Saturday, or what?
Well, they're sending their big guns, Shawn Michaels, to...
Bart and Billy?
To they're no longer a thing. Well, it's not sad. Nobody cares. But we open up with hot tag team action, Sandra. Hot tag team action.
Oh,
Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
So much action there is.
The Intercontinental Champion teams with Jerry the King Lawler against Goldust and the Wild Man Mark Meadow. Obviously, we're just coming off Mark Meadow and Sable's spats from Shotgun Saturday Night. Now, if you want to hear the full details of said spat and all the items surrounding them doing an episode of Shotgun Saturday Night in a cafe while there's patrons upstairs trying to eat food, please do subscribe to Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can listen to Sandra and I talk about Shotgun Saturday Night, where Sandra is conflicted about the fact that she has two more episodes to cover. She can't really be bothered doing any more, but she's kind of intrigued by the episodes that are coming up. So she's struggling with that, and I am just enjoying having her watch these and contemplate why she is watching them, including the Honky Tonk Man doing a duet with Todd Pettengill about the Honky Tonk Man Legend of the Ring.
Yeah, which was in my head all week, by the way, so thanks for that. Like, when I had With My Baby Tonight in my head for, you know, 2 months straight, that was kind of fine, because it was catchy, and I was like, oh, I kind of enjoy this torture, right? No, the Honky Tonk Man Legend of the Ring, when that is going through your brain for 5 days, it's like, you just want to end it all. Like, I just want to scoop my brain out of my head so that it'll go away.
Well, after last night's UK title tournament, I have Michael Cole's theme stuck in my head, which is even worse, to be fair.
I don't think it's worse. I really don't think it's worse. The nice thing is that I did watch NXT, and so Billy Kay's theme has alternately been in my head, and I like that a whole lot better.
Well, there you go. At least one out of two ain't bad. So we get this tag team match, and it's fine. I mean, it's essentially, you know, the story really is that we're going to get Goldust and Hunter Hearst Helmsley at the Royal Rumble. Mark Meadow is kind of the background player, and Jerry Lawler is kind of occasionally stepping in the ring. So, I mean, it's fine, but, like, there's a bit that really made me laugh where Honky Tonk Man tries to make an O.J. Simpson reference.
Oh, yeah.
and Vince asks him not to. Oh, God.
He says something about him on the stand or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
There is one point in the... Yeah, oh my gosh, Vince. Like, Vince wants to try and be edgy, but he totally can't be edgy yet. Like, he's just not willing to give into it. It's so weird.
Bearing in mind that he doesn't want to be edgy, but bearing in mind that 9 months before this, he had orchestrated that at WrestleMania 12, when Roddy Piper and Goldust had a backlot brawl, that they did the car chase.
Oh, that's right.
On the highway. Oh, so he'd already done the O.J. Simpson thing. Also, let's also be clear here, Vince McMahon tried to get O.J. Simpson to work WrestleMania 12.
He did?
Yes. So, the fact that Honky Tonk Man is referencing him, I will rarely stick up for the Honky Tonk Man's commentary, but here, I am on his side.
He tried to get O.J. Simpson to work WrestleMania 12.
Mm-hmm.
In 1996.
Involved. Yeah, well, he'd be cheap, wouldn't he? Because...
Well, yeah, I guess so.
It's rep.
Oh my goodness, Vince McMahon, wow. Wow, that just kind of... I mean, I shouldn't be surprised, should I? I really shouldn't be surprised at this point that he would do that.
I don't know why are you surprised in any way, shape, or form?
I don't know why that would surprise me, but it just did for some reason, and now I just don't know what to do with my life.
So, we get this tag team match.
Oh, a funny thing about this tag team match, there's this one point. I don't think Jerry Lawler ever uses a weapon, right? But, like, there's a point where he's on the apron and he's basically, like, fiddling with either a foreign object or his cock. I don't know which. Probably, I don't want to know. But he's like sticking his hand on the front of his pants, and then the camera kind of comes up behind him, because you see him kind of fiddling or whatever from one camera angle, and then there's another camera that's right next to him on the ground, and you see him like kind of fiddling around with something, and he goes, "Get that out of my face, I don't have anything, da-da-da-da-da." Interesting fact about that. Jerry Lawler still wrestles this very same match today. Except he's usually the babyface and the heel is hiding the foreign object. But I saw this twice in Metropolis this summer, where the heel, you know, dastardly heel hit a foreign object, and then everyone's like, "He has a thing," and the ref is like, "I'm a ref, I don't understand what that means." And then, you know, the Jerry Lawler ends up getting the foreign object from the heel and then winning. I saw this last summer, two times.
Yes. It's, I mean, I don't have any defense for it, Sandra. I don't. I. It's Jerry Lawler, you know?
I mean, just in case you were wondering if Jerry Lawler wrestles one match over and over and over, or if he has multiple matches, no. No.
I mean, I think he maybe used to have multiple matches when he was in, like,
his 30s.
I'm sure he did. One thing he did do that made me laugh was... at the beginning, when Mark Merrow had his pyro, Jerry Lawler was like pretending a bit of it in his eye, which made me laugh. At least he's trying. But in the end, the match ends up being a DQ because Goldust ends up choking out Triple H.
Because he's so angry at Triple H over all of the Marlena stuff. Because remember, Triple H tried to kidnap his wife. This is my other point of contention with this match, is on commentary, Vince McMahon's new talking point of Goldust is that Goldust is jealous. Because Vince says something like, we know what Goldust is not, but we also know what he is, and that's a very jealous individual. Like, I wouldn't call him a very jealous individual in this situation. Like, for instance... if Mr. Sandra were in some sort of feud with someone who tried to literally kidnap me, right? Like, mm-hmm. Triple H has, and I mean, sometime during this match, I think he says a promo or something like, "Yeah, I'm gonna beat him at the Royal Rumble, and then I'm gonna have a night with Marlena." Like, Triple H is threatening to rape a man's wife and also tried to literally kidnap her, and Goldust is upset about this. Would you call that jealousy?
No, I think that's justified.
I think so.
I would agree. I'm sorry, it just makes me laugh at how outraged you are about it.
Well, it's just kind of ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
And why is Vince trying to paint the baby face in this situation? Oh, he's very jealous. Like, no one is supposed to be likable here.
The one thing that drives you up the wall the most, which makes me laugh, is there's a way to just make you lose your shit. So say you just said all the stuff you said. What I could say is just go, "Well, Sandra, it was 1996.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Because that makes it okay. It's funny because for a lot of the stuff, like when we watched Royal Rumble 2000 for Patreon, and, you know, there was the Miss Rumble thing. I still felt pretty much the same way that I did back then about it. I still kind of thought it was fun with the car crash elements that I had. But this is more problematic for me. It's just a little bit like... because I also know where things go as well. So I'm kind of like,
I know some of where things go.
So, and also, I hope that you, Sandra, did not look at Dave Buxton's tweet that he sent to us, where he had a big... paragraph that he wrote out.
I think I read it, but then I forgot.
Okay, good. Because I basically tried to like not tell you a load of stuff that happened, and then he like tried to say that I hadn't done research and filled all the blanks, and I was like, yeah, so I tried to not tell Sandra all that stuff because she's watching Retro Raw, and it's going to come up.
But it was stuff a couple years from now, right?
But you don't want to give in, Sandra. You don't want to know things, because then you might remember it.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some...
you
I know, and I appreciate that. You're a dear, dear friend.
That is so fake.
I also have the worst memory for this stuff, so...
which is good. But I tell you what you don't have the worst memory for, Sandra. You don't have the worst memory for when we cut to the Alamo Dome. And Sid is there. And, like, I was watching this yesterday with Ollie, and, like... I mean, he is mental, and I'm not saying that he's, like, the traditional promo, but he's very captivating.
He is.
When he cuts the promo. And, like, when he was doing the whole thing about, you know, like, you know, I'm going to see that look in your eyes, and then your mother's going to be there, and I'm going to see that look from her, and then, like, spins the camera around, and it's Jose's going to be there, and he goes through all the people that are going to see the same look, and he has to be the monster. Like, this was so good.
I mean, Sid quotes Nietzsche here.
Does.
Because, I mean, see, over 100 years ago, a great German philosopher, he said, in the act of fighting monsters, in the procedure, be sure you don't become a monster yourself. And Psycho Sid, you know, he's going to have to be a monster to take what is his. And he was very, he wasn't so whisper shouty here. He was more like whispery than shouty. So it was like, ooh, I have to lean in and listen to everything that Psycho Sid is saying because I'm so captivated. I love him. And it was really interesting when he did start shouting because then it echoed throughout the arena.
Uh-huh.
And there was like this reverb effect, which made him just seem like even more colossal.
Yeah, I thought he nailed this, really nailed it. And then we obviously have to get the rebuttal from HB Shizzle.
Oh, gosh.
So, to be fair, though, to Shawn Michaels, Shawn Michaels looks fantastic in 1997. The hair is working for him. He looks young. He's got no cross eye. Everything's working for him. Apart from the fact that he should not be a babyface. That's the one thing.
The fact that he is a colossal prick.
Which would work if he was playing a colossal prick. But he's playing the hometown hero, you know? And so he does this promo in this bar where there's just people surrounding him. And he basically says that he's going to, you know, Texas people can either be nice or they can kick you in the teeth. And that's what he's going to do on Sunday.
Nobody can be a cheaper and as low down as the Heartbreak Kid.
You just want to buy his t-shirt, don't you?
Yeah.
Then we get a match with Rocky Maivia against the British Bulldog. British Bulldog accompanied by the beautiful Clarence Mason. But we do have Bret Hart on commentary for this. And Bret Hart is limping from an injury that happened yesterday morning on Superstars, where Steve Austin did the whole ankle chair thing that he did before with Brian Pillman. And Bret limped. Sold an injury, Sandra.
He did sell an injury from a whole day before. It's impressive.
Well, and if you want to get meta, he sold an injury that hadn't even been filmed yet.
Oh yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
People in the arena wonder, like, why are you limping? What is going on?
Which is also why Wildman Mark Meadow and Sable have no ill effects from their spat 2 days before, because it hadn't happened yet. So this is the part where Brett's in commentary and Vince is like, you know, so Brett, you know, Honky Tonk Man is looking for this new protege. And no, because Honky Tonk Man had basically referred to, like, Bret Hart might still be in the running. Like, so Brett's kind of phrase this week was like, you know, the WWF is a lawless land. And that's just fine with him because he now knows how to deal with it. And Vince is like, you know, would you have any interest in, you know, being associated with the Honky Tonk Man? And there's just a silence very briefly where you can feel Bret Hart just being like, are you fucking serious?
You can just feel him staring daggers through Vince McMahon like, shut up, I don't want any part of this.
Yep. And then Bret basically kind of says, you know, WWF's a lawless land, and I'll go through you like everyone else if you get in my way. And Honky Tonk Man's like, no, it's not, there's rules, and da-da-da. And then Bret quite rightly says, have you seen any of my matches recently? Like, so Bret, you know, at least Bret's holding it together with his story here, and is pretty kind of entertaining on commentary, just advancing his own story, you know, which is good. Rocky Maivia's kind of, I think the problem here was Rocky Maivia for me was, he's a kind of bland babyface, and then Bulldog's kind of likable because he tried to help Bret Hart. So there's this whole kind of like mishmash of who you're rooting for kind of thing.
Well, yeah, because it almost seemed like British Bulldog was acting more like a babyface than like a heel for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of confusing. And also, there's just not that much to latch onto with Rocky Maivia. I mean, as much as everybody's talking him up, I mean, Bret Hart is speaking very highly of Rocky Maivia to start this match. You know, half the time when Rocky Maivia's out there, we get Sonny on commentary just, like, lusting after him. There's just not that much to him right now, and it's hard to be super invested in the rise of Rocky Maivia at this point in time for me, anyway. And, I mean, the whole Bulldog, Owen, Brett, Austin thing is really interesting, but I think Bulldog is, on his own, not very interesting.
No, not right now. I completely understand where you would see that. But things do happen at some point.
Which is good. I'm glad that things happen at some point.
I'll just leave you with that tease, Sandra.
All right. Oh, good. Something happens sometime in the course of wrestling. I am so glad to hear that.
Owen Hart, though, does come out and was beautiful, just like stands at the commentary table staring at Bret Hart in case he's going to do something. And it's like totally like a brother thing to do, I guess.
Oh, yeah. It was like basically like, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they do that. And then Steve Austin ends up coming out and appears out of nowhere and clips the Bulldog and starts beating him up. And then, like, Brett's trying to get past Owen. Now, for some reason, Brett's not hitting Owen, which he probably should be. And then Owen figures out what's going on. So there's this really weird scene where Steve Austin's running to the back. Bret Hart is limping to the back, like trying to run but not able to. And then Owen's not even trying to overtake him to get to Austin. It's all very strange.
It all felt like just, I don't know, the timing on this episode. Like, nobody actually cared enough to move.
No.
They didn't care at all. I mean, the most compelling thing in the match was when Owen came out. And I think his little interaction with Brett was pretty good because, you know, like, Brett's like, I just hope Owen will leave me alone or something. And, you know, he's like, well, he's my brother-in-law, too, you know, talking about Bulldog. And they have this kind of, like, family moment. And Brett takes off his sunglasses, so it's like, ooh, things are getting serious here, right? But other than that, I mean, yeah, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin coming out to attack Bulldog. Austin's kind of going mental and just attacking everybody. You know, he attacked Brett. He still wants to attack Bulldog, even though Bulldog helped him. So, like, that's kind of another question. Do you think that if they were still going to build to Brett versus Sean, were they building to Bulldog versus Austin?
They were.
Well, that was the plan, 100%. Right?
That was the plan for WrestleMania 13.
Okay. Because, like, just from everything we're seeing here, that seems to be the plan.
Yeah, no, that was the idea. So it makes sense that that's where you think it's going.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a shame that didn't happen because I think Bulldog gets really good in 97, I think. But, you know, Bulldog's not a talker. He's not a great talker, but, like, I think he's able to get a lot of his charisma across through his wrestling and through his kind of in-ring persona. But Rocky Maivia does manage to get into the ring at the end, just in time to beat the count out. And won by count out. Who gives a fuck? This was just dull as shit.
Nobody really cares. I mean, the crowd is still chanting Rocky, so they're still behind him at this point. I'm waiting for them to turn, because I know it's coming.
Mm-hmm. Then we cut away back to Shawn Michaels and San Antonio again. Why? We've already spoken to him. Why are we cutting back to him again?
And they only do it for like 5 seconds. So it's basically just to be like, hey, remember, we're going to have Shotgun Saturday Night here? Yep, okay, good.
Yeah, do you know, and that's going to be in Park Place, Sandra, and that's where Shawn Michaels is right there.
Yeah, it's true. We better keep showing it, just in case we forget.
And then we finish the show with the main event, which is The Undertaker versus Crush, which is one of Sandra's dream bouts.
Oh, gosh. I mean, we did have a Nation of Domination promo beforehand.
We did.
Entire Nation of Domination, and there are not that many people in the Nation of Domination at this point. It doesn't seem like much of a nation.
Almost like it needs to get bigger, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, I mean, in Family Guy, when they declare, like, the Griffin House its own country, Pretoria, like, that's about the size of the Nation of Domination at this point.
Well, I guess stay tuned to see about the nation, but last night, one of our lovely listeners, Dave Bradley, had said to me, he was like, does Sandra still hate The Undertaker? And I was like, well, I said, you know, it's...
I feel like I'm crushing everyone's dreams.
You are. I think it's more like, I was like, well, you know, the problem is, you know, the news has come out that Vince McMahon has decided to go... we'll talk about this at the end, because I think we've actually got 5 minutes to talk about it. But Undertaker versus Crush happens. It's quite dull. Not much happens until Taker sort of tries to go for the tombstone, but Crush reverses it, and then Taker goes for chokeslam, and then there's a run-in, and then we basically get the Nation of Domination beating down the Undertaker until Ahmed Johnson tries to make the save with a 2x4.
In purple pajamas. What is Ahmed Johnson wearing here?
That was a tracksuit, Sandra. Not
it looks
pajamas.
Like pajamas.
And then even Ahmed Johnson, he couldn't take out the Nation. They took him out, and they were, you know, there was one point where Farouk whacked him in the back with a 2x4, and it sounded really fucking sore.
It did, and then I forget who says it on commentary, probably Vince, but Farouk just jammed him in the kidney. Because, you know, Ahmed Johnson has that injured kidney from Farouk, so...
From Farouk.
Continuity.
So, but at least, you know, they did finish the show with an angle for Ahmed and Farouk, which was good. Because I think that's one of the kind of better built matches for the Rumble, to be fair.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. I think one of my favorite things about the match is, you know, completely unrelated to the match whatsoever, but they show Park Place, and then Vince goes, "Hey, there's Rocky," who is fully dressed in a sport coat, walking in the back of Park Place, which is not next to this arena, I assume. Like, he just got done with his match and teleported to Park Place. It was incredible.
It was quite a sight. Overall, this is my first retro Raw I'm going to give a thumbs down to, because I just think it was quite a dull show.
Yeah, I'm giving this one a thumbs down. I don't think I ever really hide my feelings about these shows, do I? I'm like, this show was boring. Because it was boring, and it just... There wasn't
you can't
much
help
to it.
It.
No.
It's not like you booked it.
I didn't book it. Also, on commentary at some point, I just noticed this because I wrote it down. Honky Tonk Man mentions paying respect to the Ebonics going on in the Oakland School District right now. I have no idea what he's referencing, but maybe he should just never speak.
I feel like, you know, if Honky Tonk Man was ever going to get a job as a full-time commentator, this was the audition, and it was never going to happen.
No, it was bad. Like, where was JR?
Park Place.
Ugh.
I don't know.
Stuck the Honky Tonk Man at Park Place and JR on commentary where he's actually good at his job?
That would be a good idea. But I do want to, if very quickly, if you don't mind, Sandra, since this is going out today, first of all, you've watched the first round of the UK title tournament.
I have.
Tell us a couple of your favourites.
Pete Dunne. I love Pete Dunne. I love him so much. He starts
the
out
angle
matches,
at the end with Regal.
The angle at the end with Regal was fantastic. I mean, I fell in love with him from the start of the match when he was bending fingers backwards and twisting his opponent into a pretzel, right? Like, how am I not supposed to fall in love with that immediately? Those are my favorite things in wrestling. And then, yeah, the angle at the end with Regal, including the YouTube videos that they put out of, like, Triple H and Regal confronting him and, you know, the attack going on Sam Gradwell and everything. It was really compelling. Tyler Bate, obviously, love him, and Trent Seven, love Mustache Mountain. I was familiar with Mustache Mountain some before the tournament, so I'm a big fan of them. Obviously, my guy Danny Burch did not go on, and I'm really upset about it, because I love him, but it is what it is. That angle was interesting, though. I mean, like, do you think the blood stopped it early? Do you think that it was supposed to be the finish and the blood just made everything look confusing?
I have no idea. And I really like that I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't, like, cause I feel like I thought that something was up when obviously his shoulder had got up, cause Ollie had seen his shoulder got up, and I, like, where we were sitting on the floor, like, the camera guy was, like, at ringside, so I couldn't see the actual mat. You know, I'd have to stand up to see the mat.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see the shoulder, so I only saw it in the replay. So I would have said, you know, maybe they just ended it early, but the super kick makes me feel like there was some sort of plan. But, like, Devlin could not have been more over the heel with that.
Oh,
you know, doing that super kick.
Oh, yeah. Like, whatever was supposed to happen, it totally worked in their favor, because now, I mean, everybody hates Devlin. And I keep wanting to say Judas Devlin. Not Jordan Devlin, because there was a wrestler in NXT like a few years back called Judas Devlin, and it's confusing. But he, you know, was in the same jobber camp as Danny Burch, actually. But yeah, because, like, I mean, the whole, it was so lovely to hear an entire crowd just behind Danny Burch and actually chanting Danny Burch, which was weird because
Yeah, it was. And if you are if you enjoyed the first night of the title tournament, because this will probably be up Sunday afternoon. So head over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/theinsidenetwork, where I got the chance last night to talk to Triple H and William Regal. So that's cool. We've got the clips of that up there. We talk about maybe getting a UK pay-per-view. We're going to get to see Pete Dunne, William Regal. There's some other stuff, so do check that out. But the last thing, Sandra, I wanted to very quickly ask you is Dave Meltzer had reported this week that apparently WWE... And it's funny because I actually wanted, in my head, I really wanted to see this. And now that we're not getting it, I'm kind of excited and intrigued. And I'm kind of keen to get your thoughts. Undertaker Cena was the plan for WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. That was the big plan. You know, Dave Meltzer reported it for ages. But apparently Vince has completely changed his mind. And he's not going to go that route anymore. And that is the explanation of why Undertaker turned up on Raw. Because apparently he's now going to face a Raw guy at WrestleMania. That's the new plan. Dave Meltzer had tweeted out yesterday to a fan saying that apparently Vince wants to go with a long-term story rather than a short-term outcome with Taker Cena, which is, again, quite positive. So I guess my question is...
I have to wonder if that's a long-term story for Undertaker or a long-term story for John Cena.
Yeah, or is it... Because, I mean, initially I was kind of like, oh, I was kind of looking forward to that. And then in my head I was going, wait a minute, now... John Cena can have a match with someone else, and Undertaker can have a match with someone else. So there's two more spots opened up for other guys.
I'm excited about the John Cena part of that.
Yeah, I thought that might be the one you'd like more. But I guess, like, on the Raw side, you know, it's to say, apparently Taker's not going to be in the title match or anything, but and it's not going to be Braun Strowman. Is there anyone in the Raw side that you think would be a good fit for a match with him? One of the name that I liked and I wanted to get your take on was Finn Balor.
Yeah, I mean that's the one that I would guess would make the most sense. Actually, I mean it's hard for me to say that I really want to see that match because you know my fear.
Right? I'm aware of the fear.
Because what always happens in Undertaker matches, he just always wins, and. What do you do from there, right? But, I mean, there is something compelling. My personal fears and annoyances aside, there is something very compelling about the demon versus the dead man. It sells itself. Like, just that slogan is very compelling. And also, if Finn Balor isn't cleared in time for the Rumble, but you want to have him in a big WrestleMania match, which... I would assume they do. I mean, they're obviously behind Finn Balor. They made him their first Universal Champion. The plan was for him to be the top guy on Raw before he got injured. So, I mean, it would be a great spotlight for Finn Balor if all goes well. And I'm not even talking about, like, Finn Balor doesn't have to win. I would friggin' love it if he did. Like, I would absolutely love it.
But it's the story, right?
But if they tell a good story with it, which I don't trust them to do, but if they do... then that could be great.
Well, because for me, like, I was, you know, you're looking through the Raw roster, and, like, it feels like, as much as David McCutcheon is going to probably want to eat his own face and die, it's probably going to be Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman for the Universal title. And, like, I would much rather that match happen, and then that's just one match that's going to kind of suck, and everything else I'm going to like, you know, rather than having, like, you know, Undertaker, Braun Strowman, which probably isn't going to be any good, or Roman Reigns and somebody else. Like
you know the match I actually want to see on the Raw side?
Okay.
Is Undertaker, Roman Reigns.
Wow. Okay.
Like, probably for way different reasons than anyone else, but if Undertaker, Roman Reigns is the match, and Undertaker's not scheduled for a title match, that means Roman Reigns isn't the champion. So, I mean, this is completely delusional, right? But also, I think it would be interesting, and it's not going to get Roman Reigns cheered at all, but a heel Roman Reigns against The Undertaker could be interesting. I mean, The Undertaker's friggin' a heel anyway, but... Well, he is. I'm sorry.
You made me laugh. Because one of the things I think would be quite cool, just sort of making my own little fancy book an idea here, is that I like the idea of, like, Undertaker coming out in, like, February or March, you know, being like, you know, I want some competition for WrestleMania, but there's nobody here, blah, blah, and then the demon returns at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then have Undertaker kind of, like, visibly shaken by him. You know, like, he's actually getting to him a little bit.
That would be great if he could actually, you know, if he does actually get shaken by him and actually shows up to build the feud, that'd be wonderful.
So that could be good. And the other intrigue is where John Cena goes. You know?
And that seems very open-ended. Like, I don't know where John Cena goes. I mean, do you think that he's going to just fight AJ again at WrestleMania? Are they going to set that up? Because, I mean, keep in mind... Oh, I didn't tell you my theory about the Royal Rumble. I think someone from Raw is winning the Royal Rumble. And the reason I think someone from Raw is winning the Royal Rumble is not because, you know, it's Raw and duh, which would be a valid reason, but also because the Elimination Chamber is the SmackDown pay-per-view in between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, and the Elimination Chamber is a great place to set up a title match for WrestleMania.
That's
my theory about the Royal Rumble and someone from Raw winning it, which is kind of frustrating because it feels like, I mean, people from SmackDown are entering the Royal Rumble, but I feel like when everybody's talking predictions as to who's going to win, it's all like either an old guy or a Raw guy. And nobody even mentions SmackDown.
Yeah, because it feels like the stories that are going on SmackDown don't really involve the Royal Rumble match.
Yeah.
You know? But I was kind of looking at it, I was thinking, who could the Cena match be? And my prediction that it might be is, I think it might be Samoa Joe.
I'd be into it.
That's my... Because, like, if you think about it, Samoa Joe's not been on TV in NXT. You know, he's pretty much all but gone, really.
Oh, Samoa Joe feels like he's coming up.
So, where else do you put him? And then, with AJ, I think...
Unless you do AJ Joe.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's too good to be true. as much as that'd be glorious. But my other feeling was, maybe Joe costs Cena at the Rumble, and AJ beats Cena. And you know, you don't get that 16-time reign yet. You don't get it just yet. And then maybe AJ faces someone like Randy Orton at WrestleMania.
And you know? I would love that, actually. Like, AJ versus Randy Orton is something that I definitely want to see. And it depends where the whole Wyatt situation is by then. Like, if it's over and done. If they can use the breakup of the Wyatts, or even... if they don't break up, or if they can use the Wyatt story to propel Randy Orton into a title shot, I think that could be incredible.
Yeah, I would love to see, like, Randy Orton of the Wyatt family versus AJ Styles for the belt.
I think that'd be great.
And use the Wyatt stuff.
I actually don't think
that Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper need to necessarily be in a match at WrestleMania. I think that them being in that main event story with Randy would actually make more sense. Because, like, you know, the show is so big and there's so much going on that, like, it's going to be hard to have them in a high-profile featured thing.
Mm-hmm.
So having them involved in that would be good. Like, I would enjoy it. So.
And that would still be hopefully them involved in, like, a high-profile story, which would be nice.
Exactly.
As opposed to last year.
Exactly.
AJ Styles, Randy Orton is a match that I've wanted to see for a long time, and that actually feels like a WrestleMania title match. Like, that feels huge, because it's something that we've never seen before, and AJ Styles is a legitimate star, and Randy Orton is a legitimate star, and I think that would be great.
It would be lovely.
Are you proud of me? I talked about WrestleMania predictions without rolling my eyes and getting annoyed.
A second ago, I was like, why is she doing this? What's wrong? What's happened to her? But no, I appreciate it. I'm going to cut it off before you say anything bad. So, Sandra, thanks for coming on and talking about Retro Raw and predictions for WrestleMania. Thanks for doing that.
Of course.
Where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And check us out on Patreon to hear my soul die over Shotgun Saturday Night, to hear us cover Royal Rumble this next week. New classic content
today,
is going to be starting to go up soon.
Later today, a 3-hour Wrestle Kingdom 11 review with David McCutcheon and the return of Robert Duffin.
It's really good, you guys. It's really good. I got a sneak preview. And I enjoyed it.
You did.
But patreon.com/insidetheropes for all of that goodness.
that's where to go. So thanks for listening, everyone. We hope you enjoyed the second night of the WWE UK Championship Tournament. We should have some footage of us talking to the winner late tonight or early tomorrow, so that should be good. We'll be back on Tuesday with a Raw Rundown and all the usual stuff. So thanks for listening, have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Rhyme of strength, ain't nobody man enough to feel the pain. And you can be next, you better give respect, cause ain't nobody breaking this redneck.